You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got an email from Sarah listening on KTNF, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. She said, love the church of collective bargaining idea. I would certainly become a parishioner, and I hope so, Sarah. I hope a lot of people would. It's a great idea. She said, if Erica Smiley's book is going to be the Bible, would the IWW's Little Red Song book be the hymnal? And I hadn't thought of it. But of course, yes. What else could it possibly be? What else could we possibly have as our hymnal but the songbook? And look, this is now a work in progress. It's an idea I've had for years that I want to build that kind of, you know, that vision of power, that vision of solidarity, that vision of internalizing, viscerally internalizing, not just worker power, but citizen power in almost a blind faith kind of religious way. And while it was a kind of a joke, I actually kind of mean that we should have that kind of faith in each other. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on what I'm going to make as the official Bible of the Church of Collective Bargaining when we do it. And that would be the future we need, organizing for a better democracy in the 21st century. Last night we had Erica Smiley on. Tonight, the other co-author, Saruta Gupta, has so graciously joined us. She's also the vice president of U.S. programs for the Ford Foundation, as well as the co-author of the book. You want to check out the website, thefuturewened.com. We'll get some links out on how you can do that. Sarita, thanks for taking some time for us.
Thanks, Rick. It's great to be here.
So love the book. Again, I think this should be mandatory reading for anyone who is a member of my soon-to-be-started Church of Collective Bargaining, because we do. We need to have some common direction, some common basis of how we move forward. And this idea of building worker power, citizen power, should be the beginning of it.
That's right, Rick. I love your idea of the Church of Collective Bargaining. I think that's amazing. And I'll just say that, you know, really, we wrote this book, Smiley and I did, because it would be so easy to see everything in this moment, all the actions and organizing that we see from Starbucks to Amazon to actually congressional staffers, by the way, as we heard last night happen, as just random acts versus the evolution of a worker movement in this country and a growing faith in what it means to join together collectively and make change. And, you know, Smiley and I really felt it was important to thread together lessons we've learned over the years and to tell a different story of how these struggles add up to forging a pathway to the future we need, one in which people can live, work, and age with dignity, with agency, and with joy in their lives.
No, and a big part of this moment and why I think this moment is happening and the way it's happening is, you know, all of those fights over the last, you know, 15 years. I mean, you go back to 2008, 2009, where we had a major crisis. We hadn't built the kind of organizing, the kind of, the kind of mentality yet to really push and demand more. I think, Occupy Wall Street, I think what happened in 2008. I think, you see the teachers movement of the years that followed, the Red for Ed movements. All of those things built on each other to get us to this point to where we are now, where, people coming out of the pandemic who have been told that they're heroes and essential are now saying, you're right. I am essential. I am a hero. I did show up and now I demand better.
That's right. That is exactly right. It's such an inspiring moment that we're in right now. And our book really tries to illuminate this evolution, as I was referencing, learning from our history, but providing insights on the kinds of campaigns and efforts you just talked about. And most importantly, through the stories of worker leaders themselves, everyday people who are taking risks in their workplaces right now as we speak, and really learning from their experiences of really trying to join together with their peers, with their colleagues, negotiating for what they believe is dignity in their workplace, but then also being transformed by it and literally saying, actually, I want to be more civically engaged in society and our democracy as a whole. And that's what, the future really holds for us in this moment.
Yeah. Now, as as my listeners know, I'm a labor guy. Most of my stuff is, labor organizing. I think the best way we change society, we change this country. We give people economic power. We, in the workplace, we demand better wages, hours, conditions, dignity, respect, all of that stuff on the job. But there are other ways of building organizing power, not just in the workplace. Again, if you have one tool and it's a hammer, my hammer is labor organizing. But there's much more than just that, right?
That's right. There is. And actually, in our book, we talk a lot about the different ways that we see workers building power today. There are new approaches that are taking root in a world in which the economy has dramatically changed over the last century. We see business, finance, and the economy has just complexified over the last century and continue to globalize and fissure and all of which has eroded workers' rights and our public institutions. So now more than ever, the labor movement, our social justice movements have to be able to organize differently to really address this. And so we talk about three frameworks, three ways and approaches. One is really understanding who the real decision makers are in our economy today. And we reference them as the ultimate profiteers of global capitalism. So really getting beyond employers. Workers are caught in a shell game, I often say, Rick. If you're a worker at McDonald's or a worker at Walmart, you think you just go to your franchise or your store and you try to make change there, and you realize that they say it's not our decision, it's headquarters. And you go to headquarters, who says it's not our decision, it's the franchises. And so workers are caught in a shell game. And essentially what we're seeing is workers are much smarter than that and recognizing that actually there are profiteers of their labor. And that's who we take the fights to, whether it's the big brands for garment workers. They don't go to the factories, they go to the brands for who they're supplying. Or another approach we see is using traditional bargaining to raise issues that are broader than what are considered permissible topics to the table, right? So bargaining for the common good. And you just referenced, Red for Ed, but all the teacher strikes are great examples of this. When we think about teachers in St. Paul, Minnesota, who really fought hard at the bargaining table to make sure that their immigrant students were not in fear of raids happening in their schools, or Chicago Teachers Union fighting for housing assistance for homeless students and families. And then the third approach we talk about is how we apply these frameworks of bargaining to other economic relationships that workers hold. And we lift up the ways in which workers can come together and negotiate with any entity that makes decisions over their lives, like employers and landlords and financiers. And so we lift up examples of tenants unions or care workers and the care economy. I mean, my gosh, Rick, we're in a moment of this pandemic where suddenly people are recognizing there's a care workforce and that we really lack the kind of care infrastructure we need to support families. So we really try to lift up all these stories, but they're more than stories. They're actually giving us a path forward, that these are new and different ways to be building power today.
Yeah. And it's and again, it's the kind of political power that we haven't been building in this country for a long time. And I would argue that it's hearkening back again to the era of my grandparents' generation, where they did build this kind of power. And I would argue, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, that this is, you know, a couple Reagan era-esque forward kind of hooray for the individual, kind of pitting us against each other, you know, that has created this environment where, you know, hooray for me and the heck with everyone else kind of mentality that's put us in this moment. And we got a lot of work to do to get away from that kind of thinking, I think.
Absolutely. You know, Rick, another reason I was so inspired to write this book is my own story. You know, I didn't grow up in a union household as a child. My family immigrated to Rochester, New York, otherwise known as Kodak City. And my experience growing up, literally one town over from Kodak Park, which was the industrial facility, in a working class community where the majority of the kids I grew up with had family members who had worked at Kodak for multiple generations, has really shaped my thinking about unions and dignity and agency. Because throughout my childhood, Kodak, which was non-union, was downsizing, leaving many people in my community jobless or without the types of jobs that allowed them to sustain a middle-class lifestyle. And I literally watched the impact of this. It was absolutely devastating. And, you know, the 10-year-old me was trying to figure out, how is this possible? How can families who've worked for generations at a company lose their jobs and sense of security like this? And for many of my friends and their families, they felt and they continue to feel left behind. And that's the kind of divisions that we see in America today. There's growing anger and frustration. People feel left behind by employers and by politicians, and frankly, by our movements. And they've lost faith in our democracy and the role of government. And so this book is really about harnessing that back and saying people are feeling a lack of respect, dignity, and agency in their lives. And it doesn't actually have to be that way. We can change that. And that's what I hope this book will inspire in people.
Absolutely. The book, The Future We Need, Organizing for a Better Democracy in the 21st Century, written by Erica Smiley and Sarita Gupta. TheFutureWeNeed.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at it. I think important read. And again, this is going to be the Bible at the Church of Collective Bargaining when we get that up and running. Now, in looking at this, and this is kind of where I want to finish this at, because we are a divided country in this moment. And I've been saying, you know, for years now, the only way I see us to come back together is to do what you just talked about. Give people that economic path forward, that path forward on, we're all going to be, you know, trying to make sure that families have a path forward, that this is the kind of stuff we should be talking about. This is where the Democratic Party needs to get their heads out of wherever it is and start being the party of the working class, and even Republicans, because there used to be pro-worker Republicans in this country. I don't know how they've lost their flipping minds, but this is where we as voters need to start demanding policies that move in this direction again. And I think this is kind of the beginning of having that conversation. So I'm kind of hopeful for this book to be maybe the catalyst that moves us a little bit towards that. Too optimistic, you think?
Not at all. I think that's exactly right. Look, this pandemic absolutely blew open the layers, the depth of inequality that we find happening in this country. Over the last 2 years, employers and policies have not been meeting workers' needs. And I'll just add, especially when it comes to women, I mean, during the pandemic, women have exited the labor force at twice the rate of men. And, you know, that begs a big question of why, right?
Because they were working crappy jobs before. I mean, look, you couldn't get me to go work in a service sector job to deal with people. Are you kidding
me? Deal with
Especially
people.
Coming out of the pandemic. We haven't figured out how to be around people, other people now. There is no way you would catch me going back to waiting tables or working in a bar. Forget that nonsense. Until people figure out how to be nice to each other again, I wouldn't do any of those jobs. And I don't blame women for not going back to it.
Well, but a big part of why women aren't going back is actually because we also lack a real care infrastructure in this country. We lack the supports that women and frankly families need. I mean, Rick, in the next 5 years, the Bureau of Labor Statistics tells us that working families are going to be caring for aging adults in their households in addition to children, right? So families are feeling the squeeze, workers are feeling the squeeze, and women are often the ones bearing the brunt of caregiving, which means it makes it really difficult for them to stay in the labor force and meet those caregiving needs. And all of that, we've had such a huge opportunity right now with the discussions about the care economy, the discussions on childcare and elder care to really change all of that. And I think to your point, you know, I think a lot of people reference this moment as the Great Resignation. I think it's more like a Great Awakening, where workers are really understanding and asking themselves, like, what is the purpose of work in my life at this moment? And they're also saying they want dignity at work. Workers aren't leaving the job force completely. We're seeing trends of people having two jobs now instead of three or four. The appetite to work is there, but so is the need to work with dignity. And that is what's going to fuel our movement.
And the reward, the demand for a reward for work. And I say, look, if we had union density rates where my grandparents were at 30%, we wouldn't see resignations. We would be seeing mass strikes everywhere. And I would like to get back to that so that people don't have to go quitting, looking for other jobs or doing these idiotic gig economy jobs, which there's a whole nother organizing opportunity that needs to happen and very soon. But Sarita, I appreciate the time. Excellent book. I hope you do well with it. And I'd like you to come back again real soon and talk a little bit more about this, because this is really an important topic. And in fact, we're going to have to make you like honorary deacons or bishops or something in our Church of Collective Bargaining. You're going to have to be like the high priestesses of our church.
Happy to. I would love to come back to the Church of Collective Bargaining. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you so much, Sarita Gupta. Again, the book, The Future We Need, Organizing for a Better Democracy in the 21st Century. You can find that at thefuturewened.com or whatever local bookstore you use, just not the big A. Don't go to the A. I'll send you to Powell's if you have to go somewhere. Just not the A place. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any of the program thus far, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss a second. Subscribe so you'd never miss anything. Share with your friends so they don't miss it either. Quick break, right back after this. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I kind of like the idea of the Church of Collective Bargaining. You know, and no, we wouldn't force people to tithe. We would have dues, though, because you got to function. And I think, you know, we would build that kind of worker power that we need in more than just the workplace. You know, it's one of those things that you know, I've banged around for a while as kind of a joke, but when you stop and you really think about it, the kind of power and organizing that past generations used to do. And I think back to my grandparents. Both of my grandparents were both union stewards in the places that they worked. The unions that they belonged to, my grandmother was a UFCW member, Local 880 out of Cleveland. My grandfather was a Teamster, Local 407 out of Cleveland. They both, you know, did things that, you know, brought their members together. There were always, you know, things around holidays. There were hams and turkeys and things like that. There were always events. There were always things to engage the members, education opportunities, all kinds of things. And over the years, things have, you know, not that the unions don't still do some of that, just the communities are different. The membership is different. And this is where, you know, that has to come back. And this idea of having this of it being almost like a religion, because, you know, I knew people, you know, I've also said I've got friends who are, you know, take my NRA card from my dead cold hands. I've said the same thing about my union card. You need people to think about that in the same kind of visceral way. And it then translates into every other part of your life. If you feel empowered in the workplace, if you feel empowered to stand up for what's wrong in your workplace, you're going to feel empowered to stand up for what's wrong in society, what's wrong at the grocery store, what's wrong around you. You're going to feel empowered to right wrongs. And that's the society we should want to have. So for me, this idea is not a bad one. Not a bad idea. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Would you join the Church of Collective Bargaining? Would you become a parishioner? And should we have high priests and priestesses? Should we have a pope? Or should we have a spaghetti monster or something up top? Or would it just be, you know, we the people in solidarity? You know, because I think back, you know, over my lifetime, I've never not known that kind of power in the workplace. And I'm always surprised when people, you know, shy away from a fight. I'm always surprised when people, especially in the workplace, when people shy away from a bad boss. For instance, currently, I have called out the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO for putting a guy in as their president who I find wholly unacceptable. While I was an employee there, he was horrible to the women who worked there and to the employees who worked under his command, under his charge. And at the time, I spoke out to the guy who was president at the time, saying, "You can't treat people like that." Well out of my ability to say anything. But as soon as they made him president, I spoke out to the general public and said, this is unacceptable. The labor movement is where you take on bad bosses. And I'm hoping in Pennsylvania that the executive board, because I called this out, they are now investigating, and they have now spoken with over 40 people who have worked there in the past. And they claim there's going to be a hearing, and they claim they're going to do something. But it's because I so believe in a movement of empowered workers to stand up, speak out, and take on bad behavior, to right wrongs. That I've lived that. And I want that for everyone. I have never not known that power. And if there's one thing that I want listeners, friends who email, folks who watch, I want you to have that as well. That sense that you can change things. Because it's always been my belief, you want to change the world, you want to make this a better place, this world a better place, change your piece of it. Change the space where you stand. Make that place the best it can possibly be. You know, I know people, when I used to do organizing, "Oh, this place is horrible. I'm going to be out of here. I'm never going to come back." Yeah, but why not make it better now? So that when you do leave, it's better for you having been here. And that the next person's not going to have to suffer what you've gone through. Make it better. Take a stand. This, to me, the important moment that we're in, which is why we're seeing the kind of labor organizing that is going on. And look, you know, I look at that Amazon plant in New York that JFK ate. The fact that they were able to go and get all these worker organizers who volunteered in their time to go and you know, talk to 10 other people, who then got 10 other people to talk to 10 other people. And they grew their movement of volunteer individuals who were passionate about what they believed in and passionate about changing their little piece of the world. And thus, they have changed this country on the labor front. That is exciting stuff. That is amazing stuff. And it's something every one of us could, and I would argue should be doing. At least that's my thought. Love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Again, if you missed any of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. It's always there. You can do that at thericksmithshow.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, going to get some thoughts from Austin Infante. From Heartland Signal, our radio partners over at WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. Right back after this. Stick around. Sorry.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, ticking away till primary day here where I'm at in Pennsylvania, and the fun, oh, the fun. The Senate race here getting interesting, as you've got, not with three-way race, you've got, you know the quack doctor, you got the China businessman, now you got this woman who, well, she's as ultra mega as you can get, man. Interesting to see how crazy Republicans are in my state of Pennsylvania. Also, some fun on the governor's side. We could get somebody who is, one of the organizers, one of the guys who was, taking people down to January 6th to lead the charge to overturn the election. Patriotic Day, sunny. It was, it was like a picnic atmosphere. It was just like any other day, according to the folk that I know. Yeah, this is how crazy Pennsylvania can be. And we're one election, where I'm at, one election away from being, well, Texas or Alabama or insane. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on just how crazy things can get, not just here, but around the country. I've asked our good friend Austin Linfante to come talk with us. Austin's a multimedia editor and reporter for Heartland Signal, heartlandsignal.com. They are our radio partners over at WCPT. AM 820 Chicago. Austin, thanks for taking time for us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's kind of bad in the governor's race when national media is covering it and it's like, hey, this could get really bad really quick.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the fact that, the Senate race here has just attracted so much attention. Probably a big part of it because you got the quack doctor, Dr. Oz, who's brought some name recognition, but just the amount of money that they've brought in, that they're slinging at each other, and the two who are spent the most money might not even win, which I think is kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that at least Kathy Barnett's getting outspent 139-1. And so, I mean, we'll talk about her later. She's something else, but like, if she could pull through that would actually be kind of hilarious just to see all that money going for nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, this Senate race is, kind of interesting. And I guess, in this day and age of Trump's the ultra mega folks and a Republican Party trying to find some bit of way away from that, it's kind of an interesting dynamic. Here in the state, you got Dr. Oz, who the mega folks aren't thrilled with, and Trump supported. I think they would have gone the other way with McCormick. Interesting to see how that's going to play out, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's kind of, at the same time, this might be a van situation, which I'll be the first to admit, I was wrong on your show to say that Trump voters wouldn't be enthused over Vance. He ended up winning anyway. But still, I think it's kind of the same boat, just like you have someone who's been on the complete opposite side of Republican politics, especially with guns and gun control, and somehow still able to track in it and able to keep it up.
Now I'm looking at
you know, this Dave McCormick, again, you know, with part of the attack on him is that he's been, you know, married up with China. I mean, I've been seeing the ads that they've been running against him. You see him and then, you know, Dr. Quack, you got him, you know, going after him. You know, he is an America first. He's Turkey first. Which you go, look, you know, interesting. The Senate GOP came out and said that they don't actually have a problem with him holding two citizenships, and they don't have a problem with him getting information, having voted in a Turkish election. It's really, you couldn't write this kind of a script.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even 5 years ago, you probably wouldn't expect something like that, where like a dual citizen could easily get elected to the position.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But, you know, I look at this Barnett woman, and, you know, she's like the darling of the Newsmax crowd. And it'll be interesting, because this is a close three-way race that, you know, it just, I think, at least there's part of me that hopes, this kind of division and this kind of them ripping each other apart bodes well for whoever the Democrat is come November.
Yeah, that's definitely the hope, because I feel it might be the same case with Ohio. Again, just like this primary game, very ugly, very stupid in a way, that just kind of makes things easy for the Democratic candidates, just kind of point to them. It's like, wow, yeah, look at these people.
Let's move over to Nebraska. And, you know, tell me about this pack that's, you know, aligning itself with Governor Pete Ricketts and this whole, you know, this whole dead congressman thing. What's going on here?
Yeah, definitely. So this is the primary happened on Tuesday, and Pillen won. So I'll just start with the end right here. But basically, a PAC aligned with Pete Ricketts, who Pete Ricketts endorsed Jim Pillen. Basically, the PAC was named Say No to Rhinos. They kept on like hammering away at the moderate candidate, Brent Lindstrom. Basically saying like, oh, he's a rhino, he's no one you should support. And they kept on connecting with Brad Ashford, who was a Democratic candidate or Democratic congressman from the area. Brad Ashford's been dead since April 19th. And even up till election day, they still try to like connect the two. It's like, hey, he's getting support from Brent Lindstrom, which I guess in a way, if you're trying to say like, hey, this candidate's gained support from the dead, we don't know what that means. That could be a reasonable election tactic, just to say.
Especially for people who believe in voodoo anyway. Yeah, I get it. Sure.
But yeah, like even up till election day, they still try to connect Brent Lindstrom to a dead congressman.
Wow. Well, I guess when you don't have much, when there's not much there as a matter of policy, I guess you take what you can get. Is that it? You work with what you think your constituents care about. And I guess dead Democrats are better than good policy.
Yeah, but this is probably a person who's going to run for Senate or possibly president. I would think he'd do a little bit better.
Oh, jeez. Yay. This is such fun. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Austin Linfante. Austin is the multimedia editor and reporter over at Heartland Signal. HeartlandSignal.com is the website if you want to check out the work that they do there. They are our radio partners over at WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. Now, look, you know, I'm looking at some of the craziness going on in Michigan. Seems to be, you know, a lot of fun there, too. I mean, it's, if nothing, this election cycle has been entertaining for just how extreme some of these candidates have gotten. And now you've got the Republican endorsed Secretary of State candidate there in Michigan, who, you know, this podcast just seems to kind of be kind of gold with her.
Yeah, no kidding. Whenever she wins that nomination, it's just gonna keep up coming up again and again and again, because I've been talking to a reporter who's becoming Zach Cunningham, and it's like every minute or like pretty basically every 30 seconds, there's just something else that would just be absolutely insane. And she just keeps on going on a roll. This one specifically they covered was basically, again, she's very anti-LGBTQ plus, and basically she likened it to like, hey, like seeing like a person you love being LGBTQ plus is like, and I quote, direct quote, likened to if I'm watching a friend about to get hit by a train. Basically, like,
I'm curious what she's watching. I'm curious. I'm never mind. Let me not go there. You just keep going.
Basically, she was like, hey, you got to do something to get that person off the tracks and like help them convert and realize the way of their pains. And it's like, it's not any different than that. In fact, it's worse. Direct quote. And she goes on to talk about Satan's war against humans and stuff like that. Again, this is the same person who said that you can't criticize anyone that's not straight, or else you have to, quote, bow to the rainbow god, unquote. And this is the person who won the nomination prestige vote, 2/3 of the vote.
Wow.
I can see you. It's just like, this is going to keep on coming up again and again and again. Every single like hour long podcast episode is essentially this, and it's absolutely gold. And the fact that it's like a gold for like absolutely insane quotes.
And again, it shows that, you know, I think, you know, that just how far, and this is where I reach out to my Republican friends. And look, I have some that I still respect. And you know, although we're getting to the end of that rope, because of people like this, who, you know, I don't know what she's thinking. I don't know what's in her head. I don't know what is going through the channels of watching a friend getting hit by a train. I don't even know if she has any friends that are gay. That would be the weird part of this. Because I think people have created these environments in their head. Because here's the example. You know, I knew a guy long time ago, who was so anti-same-sex marriage. Now, anti-gay, all this stuff, but didn't actually know any, and was lecturing us about how, you know, gay marriage was going to be the end of his marriage. It was going to be the sanctity of marriage as a whole. Until I said to him, I go, you know, I don't get how people you really don't know getting married has anything to do with your marriage. I would think, and, you know, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but I would think that the girlfriend that you have in Massachusetts with the kid that your wife doesn't know about back in Pennsylvania, I think that would have a lot more to do with ending the sanctity of your marriage than two people you have no idea who they are getting married. I'm just spitballing here, just throwing some ideas out. And this is one of those things where people are pointing at everybody else and not themselves. You know, mind your own damn business for a change. Look inward. There's a mirror. They're created for a reason. Here's one of those.
You're really just airing that live on over the radio waves, aren't you?
Well, I'm sure those kids are long. This is 20 years ago. I mean, those kids are all, he knows who he is because we've had this conversation a couple of times. And yes, I think that kind of hypocrisy is important to point out. Because he was one of those outwardly people, good God-fearing, Bible-thumping Christians who you would have thought upstanding. And this is the problem with those folks. They project so much of piety and religiosity and, hey, be like me, but yet you peel back that first layer of onion and everything underneath it is rotten to the core. And this is my problem with these people who keep trying to tell me and anyone else how to live their lives. When you turn that mirror around and you examine what they're doing, oh, they don't want that. And this is part of that, I think. And this is an important part of it, which is why I'm hoping that some of my Republican friends go, you know what? Maybe some self-examination, kind of important. Maybe just a thought, and I know this is difficult. Maybe I should mind my own damn business and leave other people alone. Lead my best life, let them lead their best life, and we'll be just fine.
Exactly. And you said it perfectly. I think like Christina Carmano can work at a movie theater with how much she projects.
That's crazy. Now let's move over to Minnesota, because you got to go to Minnesota. Why not? Our good friends listening on KTNF, your representatives are just as bad. So don't get up any Minnesota. But you got Representative Steve Drazkowski, I guess is how you say his name, wants to abolish early childhood education. And why not? Because, you know, parents should have the right to have their kids for 6 years before those school buses back up and infect their mind with math and education.
Yeah, and this wasn't like he was getting pressed on it. He was just talking on the floor about an omnibus tax bill. He just kind of brought this up. It's like, hey, I think our schools are indoctrinating children. We should we should get rid of early childhood education. Just get rid of it. They don't need to get indoctrinated. Yeah, just spend 6 years of your life staying at home, taking care of a kid. That'll be fine.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing, Austin. I am not horribly opposed to the idea. You might be able to convince me. If you came to me with some policy, other than just throwing things out idiotically on the floor, if you had some actual policy to say that, you know, we're going to encourage families to bring children into this world, we're going to encourage families by, you know, having, you know, education policies, healthcare policies, maternity leave policies, so parents can bond with their children and one parent can stay home, like, oh, I don't know, like Leave It to Beaver did back in the 50s, so that, you know, we could have that child home till 6 years old so that they wouldn't have to be latchkeys, or they wouldn't have to go to, you know, a daycare, or they wouldn't have to do any of those other things, and parents could afford to do it. I would be, yeah, let's talk about that, because maybe that's a way forward. But there's no policy to back this up. There's just stupidity. And this is, again, maybe he should have gone to public school. It probably could have helped him, because it might have made him empathetic to others. Maybe being around other people instead of homeschooled, which I think is child abuse, maybe he'd have been a decent person. Just, again, throwing stuff out there.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like you got a good thing going there, but that would also require something like the child tax credit and, like, so education support, and conservatives don't want to do that. That's literally communism.
Exactly. And this is my whole problem with the abortion issue. Look, you know, there's part of me that goes, okay, you know, if you really... truly, and I know people who are truly against abortion, and my first response to that is, well, don't have one. That's pretty simple. If you're against it, don't do it. Same thing with same-sex marriage. If you're against it, here's the key. Don't do it. If someone asks you, say no thank you. Pretty simple. It's not mandatory. If someone asks you, you don't have to say yes. And no one is trying to make you say yes. That's the other part of it. Important. But, you know, on the abortion issue, you look, if there were people saying, yeah, we want to make this illegal, but we're going to have, you know, incredible education programs. We're going to make contraception, you know, available everywhere. We're going to have policies that if children are born, we're going to make sure that we have the best policies to get maternity leave, to get health care, maternal care, all of the things that encourage people to have children. We're going to get good jobs for people so that they can support children. Those are the things that are most important in all this to me. But no, there's none of that. There's just draconian, you must and you will, and we're going to force you. Like Ron Johnson, you know, take him for example. He doesn't think it's going to be an issue there in the state of Wisconsin. And I'm listening, you know, reaching out to my friends in Waukesha and Madison and Milwaukee, to our listeners there. Hey, how about making this an issue for Ron Johnson wherever he stops? But, you know, he doesn't believe it's going to be an issue, Austin, at all. Not going to be an issue.
Yeah, I was actually listening to his telephone town hall last night, and he went really hard into this. Basically, oh, it's not going to be an issue. The state, it's going to be settled. It'll be a state's thing. Even though it's been settled since Roe. Roe was the thing that settled it, that gave it the right. So he's trying to avoid talking about it by saying, oh, it won't be an issue, even though it's going to come up again and again and again.
Yeah.
And we'll see if he's prepared. I don't think he is. Just covering Ron Johnson, I know he's kind of prone to this.
Well, his strategy is simple. Say something even crazier. You know, something like, oh, I don't know, COVID vaccines cause AIDS. You know, sure. go even further to the extreme where people go, oh yeah, well, you know, that's bad, but this is even worse. So focus on really crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's the same kind of Trump thing where it's just like you kind of saturate with so many dumb stuff that just kind of numbs you to it. And you just have to like find a way to move forward.
And that's why I don't envy, or maybe I do, because I think I don't know that I read this stuff, and every time we talk, I can't help but laugh at the state of the Republican Party. But the other side of me is crying, because this is the state of democracy in our country and the state of the future. It, you know, we're one election away from, oh my God, we're crazy.
Rick, I have that conversation in my head every day.
Every day. And that's why we're glad you're here to share some of that with the rest of us. But Austin, I appreciate the time. As always, the work you guys do is there. Extremely important and incredible. Hope folks will check it out at heartlandsignal.com. Austin Linfante, appreciate the time, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Always fun.
Great stuff. Austin Linfante. He is the multimedia editor and reporter over there over at Heartland Signal. Again, like I said, check out their website, heartlandsignal.com. And seriously, I'm it's scary, scary stuff. Scary, crazy. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Some emails to get to. If you want to email me, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Some of the crazy ones I actually use on the show. And look, I use as many as I can. But this one caught my attention this morning as I woke up to, again, a troll. And I'm gonna throw this out as a troll. I believe Jeff is a troll. And look, if you're going to email me and you're going to say, you know, stupid stuff and use expletives and call names, at least use your own email so I can respond. And I don't respond in kind with the kind of vulgarity and nonsense that you throw at me. I will make the proper response. The response to this guy, Jeff, if that's his name, was, "You're a twisted dude." That was the response, because this is a twisted email. He goes into saying that, you know, Republicans aren't taking away abortions from irresponsible women. They're giving it back to the states where it should be. No. It should be with women. Sorry, Jeff. I know your incel mind doesn't understand this, but women should have control of their own bodies. Pretty simple. He goes on to say, if a woman doesn't want to get pregnant, there's a lot of preventative ways not to get pregnant. Yeah, one of them, like you already know as an incel, don't have sex with people like you. That's a part of it. He said, I should not. Do I want to pay for a bastard child? I don't think that's a problem you have. Just throwing that out there, Jeff. But, you know, this sentence, should take a look at the one before and think about how those two go together. He goes on to say, your polls you are spewing are a biased poll. Look at the all states that Republican legislative majorities, they were elected. It the left coast and least coast are pushing for abortions. They don't speak for middle America. Now, I struggle reading that because it is poorly written, but I read it verbatim, word for word. So you got exactly what was written and the intent. And look, you know, the reality is he's accurate. There are more people in middle America who are anti-abortion than there are on the coasts. It's true. I still argue that there are a majority who think it should be safe and legal because no one, at least no one my age and older, wants to go backward to the days where women were dying in back alleys or dying from botched abortions. But he says, you know, this is the way our republic is set up. We're not a democracy. Bet you were taught in public school. Just moved you ahead so you didn't get your feelings hurt. I don't know what that means. I think he's trying to mock public school. So I'm guessing he was homeschooled. With as much money as we spend on education, we should be number one in the world. But thanks to NEA and teachers union, we are laughing stock of world. That's written verbatim. I don't know, Jeff. Here's a little advice. If you're gonna knock the NEA and teachers, you probably shouldn't do it with poorly written sentences. You should probably think about the words that you use. Maybe have someone spell check one and then grammar check
too. Just throwing it out there. He says, yes, we are a divided country because this country has lost its moral standing in the world. Example. And this is where it went completely off the rails. And I got to hit this. He says, example, a woman 2.5 months pregnant goes and gets an abortion because it's not a living being, but someone, male, hit that woman and the baby dies. He's charged with murder, but it's not a living baby that same day. And it was going to be aborted. You can't have it both ways. And I'm going, Jeff, buddy, you're a twisted dude. You don't go hitting women. I don't care the reason. And is this your justification? Has this happened to you? Are you speaking from experience? Jeff, get help. That's the best I can do with. Now, I mean, this whole screed, all of these are right-wing talking points. All of these are things that they throw out there to grab your attention, to get incels like Jeff to write idiotic things like this and then not put their name to. This is the state of our discourse, because Jeff was a coward and Jeff didn't even allow me to respond. So that's why I did it here. So Jeff, I hope you got that. I hope it helps you. And truly, I hope you get the help that you need, because this, my friend, this twisted. Love to hear your thoughts. Maybe weigh in on Jeff's thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you grab the podcast there at therickssmithshow.com or wherever you get your podcast, from iTunes to iHeart, Podbean to Stitcher, anywhere in between. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.